The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I was listed, had the great pleasure of being listed as the poorest man in Congress for 36 years. I still had making a lot more money than anybody else because I was getting a senator's salary. No kidding. I didn't think you should make money while you're in office.
Entire books have been written about him making money off of his office, his position, be it as a congressman, of course, vice president, those 8 years under Barack Obama. Tens of millions. And the revelations of late, the money coming in from China to his family. I mean, yeah, he's good at spreading it around. He's quite skilled at laundering the money. But everyone in his family is filthy rich because of the money made off of his political influence. That's right. That's the truth. Hunter Biden's laptop proves it. These books by Peter Schweizer, he's written two of them, I believe. I mean, it's really, here's the fake president of the United States in New Hampshire yesterday talking about how, of all things, talking about how poor he is. You can't make this up. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. And, of course, to get to the live video stream, you have to go directly to our website. That's thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live. And you could get to this program every weekday at 11 a.m., 11:05, I guess, after the top of the news or the news at the top of the hour. That's at the central time zone of the United States. So you can make the adjustment wherever you happen to listen in. And we do have listeners and viewers from all over the world, and we certainly appreciate your email feedback from time to time. You can write the program td@thetrumpet.com. Hopefully today we'll have some time to go through a few emails. So a couple of things stand out. You saw one of them, but a couple of things stand out from Joe Biden's speech yesterday in New Hampshire. For one, lots of empty chairs. I think 50 or 60 people show up in this warehouse to hear. There you see all these open chairs. This is the man who got 81 million votes, we're supposed to believe. 81 million, 11 or 12 million more than Barack Obama at his peak of influence and popularity. Joe Biden running away with tens of millions of votes, and he can't even fill up a warehouse. This is the sitting president, fake one at that, but the sitting president of the United States. And then he's there, of course, talking about how poor he is, of all things. This is from the New York Post. This, keep in mind, is from January of 2020. So this is 7, 8, 9 months before we heard about Hunter's laptop. Peter Schweizer, he wrote the books. I think his first one came out around this time. I forget the title of it, but in any event, he's writing here for the New York Post. Political figures have long used their families to route power and benefits for their own self-enrichment. He refers to his new book, Profiles in Corruption, Abuse of Power by America's Progressive Elite. It says here, one particular politician, Joe Biden, emerges as the king of the sweetheart deal, with no less than five family members benefiting from his largesse. It says, favorable access and powerful position for commercial gain. In Biden's case, these deals include foreign partners and in some cases even U.S. taxpayer dollars. The Biden family's apparent self-enrichment involves five family members, Joe's son Hunter, son-in-law Howard, brothers James and Frank, and sister Valerie. They're all just raking it in. It says, when this subject came up in 2019, Biden declared, I never talked with my son or my brother or anyone else, even distant family, about their business interests, period. Just an outright lie, a blatant lie that he kept telling over and again, even in the debates with Donald Trump in the lead up to the November 2020 election. He just lied. And there he is yesterday, continuing on with the big lie that he's just a poor, poor congressman coming from Delaware, a career politician who is filthy rich, together with all of the family members as well, his brothers, son-in-law, son, Hunter. CNBC, this is more recent, it says Joe Biden used to joke about being the poorest man in Congress. It would be impossible for him to claim poverty now. The years since Biden left the vice presidency in 2017 have fattened his wallet. Well, it goes on and talks about all the money that he made in between Obama's second term and now his third term. In any event, the way that these people play the system, pull in the millions, it was coming in from Ukraine, from Moscow, from China, all over the world, and then spread across the family. And we know from Hunter's laptop, I mean, Hunter would take care of, the big guy got his cut, but then Hunter also took care of the bills. So it doesn't much matter how much is in Joe Biden's main bank account. That might just be a few million, but the tens of millions, perhaps hundreds of millions, it's spread right across the family. We know they're good, particularly skilled at laundering money, laundering ballots, as I discussed with you earlier this week. Just to follow on what we mentioned yesterday, the fact that all of his handlers were working overtime on the weekend to just tell him where to go, what to do, what not to do, and how that America's enemies, they're emboldened by this display, the doddering old man, as was covered yesterday on the show. This is a follow-up on China's economic might. It's an article, I forget where it comes from, but in any event, it says here, China has chosen trade as its preferred instrument for advancing its interest in the world and honed its skills in weaponizing commerce to coerce others. As I was saying, even with what's happening at present around Shanghai and elsewhere in China, these brutal lockdowns, and how that this could potentially hurt the United States all the more because we're in such bad shape economically as it is. More supply chain problems because of what's happening in China as well. For sure, it hurts the United States. Having a weak president, and of course, it's all by design. It's not like we've said at the trumpet. It's not incompetence, even if it might look like it. It's an attack. It's an attack on America from within, and it's emboldening America's enemies from without. We've talked in recent weeks about this fake kidnapping. The Michigan Governor Whitmer, this was from the U.S. News a few days ago. It says a federal prosecutor has withdrawn from the case of a plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. It says a federal prosecutor withdrew Tuesday from the case of a plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, days after two men were acquitted and the jury couldn't reach a unanimous verdict for two more. They couldn't get the guilty verdict. That happened on April 8th. We covered that on this program. They couldn't get the... Now you've got one of the prosecutors. I think there are just two main prosecutors representing the government. One of them's quit. He's done. He's done. He didn't have to explain why he was bowing out. But they can't, as I've said, we sent out a trumpet brief last night, by the way, exposing the FBI who set up these men. There are more FBI agents involved in this so-called kidnapping operation than there were actual ordinary citizens. says here, on April 8th, this is from the Trumpet Brief, just last evening, a federal district court rendered its verdict on two of the four men. Well, you know some of the details of that case. We refer to that BuzzFeed story where it talks about how that this was some sharp, sharp rebuke coming from this jury for the FBI and for the DOJ. It says here, BuzzFeed News and others showed that numerous FBI informants and agents did more than passively observe these militiamen. Instead, they infiltrated the Wolverine Watchmen militia and orchestrated nearly every aspect of the alleged kidnapping plot. The FBI, think of it, think of this. The FBI orchestrated every aspect of the kidnapping plot. It says here, the outcome of the trial is a stunning rebuke to the prosecution. And now one of the prosecutors, he's gone. I want to get out of this case. I don't want to have anything to do with it. It says here, the FBI and the Department of Justice provided the group with organization, finances, logistics, and encouragement to carry out a kidnapping plot that otherwise likely would have remained idle talk. Then when those men took action, FBI agents arrested them. But they weren't just springing a trap on this group. It says here, this is from our Trumpet Brief just last night, the arrest came at an interesting moment, less than a month before the 2020 presidential election. And we might add to that, just 3 months before the insurrection hoax of January 2021. And you know about the connection between the FBI office in Detroit, the one who managed that office, how that he was transferred over to D.C. This was a trial run for the insurrection hoax. It's no problem for the FBI to not just infiltrate these groups, but to actually plan the attack or to devise the plot and to try to recruit more ordinary Americans into the effort. It says here, Whitmer immediately jumped on the opportunity. Well, let me just back up. It says, it was an attempt to portray everyday Americans who care about the Constitution as possible kidnappers. Whitmer immediately jumped on the opportunity. She tried to link the plot to the rhetoric of President Donald Trump. Corporate media commentators also proclaimed the arrest to be proof that Trump supporters and lockdown skeptics are dangerous white supremacists. And we have to keep going back and showing you this, because here again, They've blotted out this truth. Who can forget? If you watch this show, you're not going to forget the media hyperventilating over these white supremacists and just heaping praise on the FBI and the DOJ. Oh, thank you for the FBI. Thanks to the FBI for cracking this case, for exposing these white supremacists. Here's a sampling. This is put together by Grabian just recently, clip two.
What an alarming story out of Michigan.
This plot to attack, to storm, to kidnap you.
A plot to kidnap, put me on trial, and execute me.
They were going to put her on trial in the woods. You know what the verdict was going to be in that trial.
Take her to a secure location in Wisconsin for a trial, a treason trial.
They were going to take her off in the woods in Wisconsin and execute her. Like Al-Qaeda style.
They're plotting to kidnap and try me and murder me. That's if it was something that sounds like ISIS. That's the kind of thing that you would expect to hear from a group like ISIS.
It's the sort of behavior you might expect from ISIS.
We have seen terrorist plots, for example, the kidnapping plot against the governor of Michigan.
This is a new manifestation of these domestic terrorists now.
Make no mistake. That's who they are, domestic terrorists.
We have to call it out for what it is. It is domestic terrorism.
No one has ever had a really viable plot to do this on the scale that we're looking at.
Thankfully, the Department of Justice, the FBI, Michigan law enforcement stepped in and prevented something really bad from happening.
Right. Thankfully, the FBI stepped in to prevent Governor Whitmer from being executed in the woods of Wisconsin. A complete and total hoax. A hoax. And it's now, a jury has decided. Here again, the courtroom, the judge was all for this hoax. carefully limiting the defense from giving any kind of context to some of the clips and the audio and such that was played in the courtroom. But a jury saw through it all. A jury of their peers says not guilty. No. No, these people are not guilty. The government's guilty. The government's the one that organized this plot. The government's the one that funded it. The government's the one that recruited some a little bit of out-of-balance individuals, perhaps. But rhetoric, you know, or a militia group, that's not illegal to just say something stupid. But they went after him with all the force and the power that the DOJ wields, and they lost. And they lost. The Trumpet Brief says here, the government systematically hid evidence and witnesses that might undermine the arguments of the prosecution. They did not want any of the militiamen's shocking statements put into context, so defense attorneys had to work extra hard to show their clients were just loudmouth anti-lockdown cranks who did not really intend to hurt anyone. They were framed. The government tried to frame them for attempted murder, and they weren't trying to hurt anybody. It says here, the Department of Justice, which includes the FBI, is one of the most powerful institutions in this country. The DOJ and the FBI have become perhaps more powerful than ever, more partisan than ever, and more willing to violate the Constitution than ever. And the reason we don't want to let this story die is because of the connection to January 6th. It's because this was, forget about the fact, too, that it was the October surprise. I mean, this was all, that montage there is from October 2020. So there's your media working overtime to show that anyone who supports Donald Trump is a white supremacist. So you shouldn't vote for him. There they were, rigging the election. And they did it in so many different ways. They concealed Hunter's laptop. They promoted a hoax like this. And then, of course, there's just the outright laundering of ballots. Thanks to Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, and all these other left-wing groups. And the mules by the thousands that were getting paid $10, $15, $20 per ballot. Stuffing the ballot boxes, the drop boxes, put all over the cities. Got to do it because of COVID. And 100 million ballots mailed out. And people, if they even talk about it today, well, they're a dangerous insurrectionist, as I covered on yesterday's show. Can't even bring it up. We're just supposed to play along. It's kind of like a Joe Biden rally or a speech. Nobody's there. He's lying. And we're supposed to just play along like this is all legit. And that what we're actually seeing is the truth, or we're hearing the truth. It's anything but. It says here, according to Revolver News, the FBI infiltrated three of the militia groups at the Capitol Hill protests. So here again, the FBI infiltration. Infiltration. The FBI leading the insurrection. So just set aside Michigan, the trial run in Michigan for a moment. And now you've got all these FBI agents and informants infiltrating the Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, the Three Percenters, in a similar way that it had infiltrated the Wolverine Watchmen, you know, the operation up in Michigan. It says here, that means many of the January 6th protesters languishing in prison might have been entrapped in a similar way to these guys in Michigan. Who can forget Ray Epps? The Trumpet Brief, just last night, it said the Oath Keepers were led by Stuart Rhodes during the Capitol protest. The Proud Boys were led by Enrique Tarrero until just prior. Both men, listen to this, both men are FBI assets. It is not a stretch to think that the FBI could have orchestrated the violence on that day. I mean, we already know this. The guys heading up Oath Keepers, the guys heading up the Proud Boys, they're FBI informants. And then you add Ray Epps to the list. and all these other characters, the scaffolding guy who kept telling the crowd, go inside, Ray Epps, we got to go into the Capitol. It says here, the Whitmer case was a weapon to try to influence the election. When voters still cast their ballots for Donald Trump, radical liberals had to commit massive fraud to steal the election in real time. When many Americans sensed that Joe Biden winning 81 million votes, the most in American history, when they sensed this was a lie, the radicals had a plan to force it through regardless. Just force it through. Well, but wait a second. There's piles and piles and piles of evidence of fraud. 100 senators, congressmen, they're going to go through the evidence. They're going to demand that the evidence be examined on January 6th, according to the Constitution. And yet what happened? Well, for 4 hours, you had people taking selfies inside the Capitol. And then those same talking heads on the media, the same propagandists, who said that they were trying to execute Governor Whitmer. Whitmer herself said this. Whitmer and Joe Biden said it was like ISIS. They got in there. We had the FBI in there, thankfully, because they busted up this ISIS operation to execute Governor. Doesn't this just sound preposterous? Of course it does. And yet, listen, you listen to that montage, tells you everything that you need to know. They lie, blatantly. And then when the truth comes out, well, it always comes out about 18 months later, doesn't it? And then they don't really care much about the story. It's already served its purpose. And then a prosecutor says, hey, I want to get out. This isn't going anywhere for us. And so he quits. Says here, if FBI assets posing as Proud Boys and Oath Keepers had anything to do with the violence at this protest, then the agency pulled off a coup d'etat using the same techniques it used to entrap Caserta, Harris, and the Wolverine Watchmen. The unspoken truth, listen to this, we've given you this quote before from Real Clear Politics. It says, the unspoken truth is that Donald Trump had nothing to gain and everything to lose by the violent assault on the Capitol that day. See, Trump was wanting those congressmen to present the evidence, and they were prepared to do that. And then after the insurrection hoax, spearheaded by your FBI, spearheaded by the Department of Justice, after those 4 hours in the afternoon of January 6th, well, it intimidated those congressmen and women into submission. There were a few that still spoke out, but for the most part, it shut everyone up about the election steal, which is exactly what the communist left wanted. Don't get into the evidence. Don't examine fake ballots. Don't listen to witnesses who said there was cheating going on. Just erase it all and pretend that the Capitol was attacked. Pretend that it was this violent insurrection. Pretend that they were terrorists. Ted Cruz even said that about January 6th. He was going to be one of the ones to present the evidence on January 6th. Then, just a few months ago, we played the clip. Just a few months ago, he called those Trump supporters terrorists. You see, it's as if they're all reading from the same playbook. This is like ISIS. Because of the FBI, we were able to break up that ISIS cell. They were going to take Governor Whitmer into the woods and execute her. That's right. That's the greatest danger facing the United States. That's the greatest threat, so say the communists, facing the United States of America. And then we now come to find out that these were just, you know, a few rednecks who said some things that they shouldn't have, but they weren't kidnappers, they weren't murderers, and a jury decided in their favor. That's pretty incredible. That's pretty incredible when you think about it. the lengths that we have to go to just to get to the truth. Jesus called the devil the father of lies. There's just so many lies that you have to weed through in order to get to the truth. This administration, it's not legitimate, as we well know, but there are some signs that it's taking some hits. And the New Hampshire speech, again, just open your eyes and view what's happening. This hoax as it plays out right in front of our eyes, 50, 60 people at this speech yesterday in New Hampshire, all of these empty seats. The fake president talking about how poor he is, how he's never enriched his or his family's lives because of his political influence. A Florida judge, we alluded to this yesterday, she ruled on Monday that the CDC's mask mandate is it's not constitutional. She basically said, I think I got a quote from her ruling, she said, the court concludes that the mask mandate exceeds the CDC's statutory authority and violates the procedures required for agency rulemaking. It says the court vacates the mandate and remands it to the CDC. Biden, of course, and the CDC, they extended the mandate to early May. So now the administration's in a it's in a difficult position. Is it going to come out and try to challenge this ruling? Try to appeal this to the next level? This is from the DOJ yesterday. The Biden administration itself has sort of been back and forth on what's to happen here. Jen Psaki's talking about it being appealed. Joe Biden, for his part, yesterday said, people should decide on their own whether they want to wear a mask on a plane. This is from the DOJ, though. It says the Department of Justice and the CDC disagree with the district court's decision and will appeal, subject to the CDC's conclusion that the order remains necessary for public health. So basically, the DOJ comes in talking tough, but then essentially punts the ball to the CDC. And keep in mind, when you listen to these radicals talk about mask mandates and how it saves lives, I mean, there's such a sense of urgency. Where is the emergency sense of urgency here, though, for the DOJ to say, we'll basically wait until what the CDC decides as to whether we'll appeal this or not? I mean, if everybody's dying, I mean, you know what the public thinks. That's why they're cheering on these planes and such. When they make you've seen probably some of the clips. Here's a sampling of people, ordinary people, reacting to the decision by this one judge who had the courage to stand up to these unelected bureaucrats with all of these communist leanings in wanting to impose their will on everyone else. Here's clip 8.
But we're ready to give them up. So thank you and happy unmasking day.
First time in 2 years. Woo!
Congratulations.
That mask mandate is gone. Masks are no longer required.
Will no longer enforce the federal mandate requiring masks in all U.S. airports and onboard aircraft.
Finally!
Effective immediately.
Jen Psaki says that this is just anecdotal, all of these clips, because she says you still need to mask up. And she was asked the other day, well, what about here in the White House briefing room? We don't have to wear masks. And she tried to say that, well, according to the CDC, there's certain levels of danger, and we're in a less dangerous zone, I guess. listened to her yesterday. I think this was on Air Force One, if I'm not mistaken, clip six.
We have said from the start that our COVID response should be guided by the science and data and by experts. And just as a reminder, when we had made this announcement, the CDC said it needed 15 days to assess the impacts of an uptick in cases on hospitalizations, deaths, and hospital capacity. We still feel, that is entirely reasonable based on the latest science. And public health decisions shouldn't be made by the courts. They should be made by public health experts.
Right. The health decision shouldn't be made by a judge or a court. It should be made by the bureaucrats. The CDC, the ones making the decree, the government, the experts. I just want to conclude this segment with that this was a monologue yesterday on GB News, and it just made me think of that article we had in the trumpet. This goes back to June of 2020, right at the absolute peak of the hysteria surrounding COVID-19. That article, you might remember, "The cure is killing us. The cure is killing us." 2 years on, and still you have all these blue checks at Twitter. Still you have all these communists in the media that are just beside themselves. They cannot believe that this judge, a Trump-appointed judge, by the way, would dare strike down this mask mandate. They want to keep wearing masks forever. Forever. This is from, his name is Mark Dolan, as I say, it's from GB News yesterday, talking about the COVID industry. I mean, that's what it is. It is an industry now. This is clip three.
With a waiting list some fear will reach 12 million, the health impact from the NHS reaction to the virus will, in my view, be far worse than the virus itself. And the impact will often be on younger people in the prime of their life. Like a young mother, for example, who wasn't able to get that lump checked out and who must now say goodbye to her family. The messaging from COVID zealots is universal and almost from a script. The pandemic is far from over. That is what they say. Not much of a pandemic, is it? One that you've got to keep reminding people is there.
Nice. You have to keep reminding them that this is a pandemic. We've got to wear masks. You better get the vaccine. There's still people dying of heart attacks, mysteriously collapsing on ball fields. We'll leave that for another show, I suppose. But here's Mark Dolan again from GB News yesterday, clip four.
Of course it's still there because these people never want it to end. COVID is now an industry. Think of the billions that organizations around the world are making from this potentially dangerous, sure, but largely mild virus. Vaccine manufacturers, mask manufacturers, the producers of PPE equipment, testing companies, ventilation units, the outlets that make those horrific plastic screens for shops and offices, the billions of liters of sanitizing fluid, which I think is actually bad for your health. It's all a total money spinner and a racket.
The total racket. Again, you think back to some of the things we were saying, even on this program, 2 years ago. In March, April, May of 2020, a total racket. He said a mild virus. Maybe at that time it was worse than mild, but it was the flu, and we now know manufactured by the communists in China with the support of Fauci and friends. We can't say that enough either. That's the truth. What is going on? And then these are the same people insisting that you put a mask on yourself if you travel. You certainly put one on a five-year-old off to kindergarten. Here's one last clip from Dolan's commentary, clip five.
And of course, health bosses obsessed with COVID were the ultimate lockdown cheerleaders with their effective pursuit of zero COVID for almost 2 years, which has placed our health systems under such strain and will do for many years to come. And having demanded policies that absolutely smashed the economy and burdened it with what will eventually be another trillion quid's worth of debt, They've actually damaged the cash cow that pays for everything they want.
The cure, as we wrote in June 2020, is killing us. It's worse than the disease itself. Here's a bit from that article. It says, at some point, COVID-19 will go away, but the cure will remain. Well, like he brings out in his commentary, they don't even want it to go away. They want it to stay with us forever. It says here, whether COVID-19 has affected or will affect your health, your livelihood, or your freedoms, you need to take note of what has just happened to the world. The immensely powerful and self-destructive reaction to a bad flu season illustrates the power of Satan to prey on emotions. He can wreak havoc worldwide, and he can do it in your life as well. The battle here is not just against a virus or confusion or misinformation or an agenda. It says for the world and for you individually, it's against Satan. Satan the devil. There is a real spirit world. There is a spirit behind these draconian steps that have been taken, these authoritarian regimes. Finally, you have a few beginning to stand up. It's not the Biden people. You can see why they're not talking so tough after this ruling, because they had, with respect to COVID and all of these unconstitutional decrees by bureaucrats, they haven't held up very well in court. And so here's another example of a judge who just gets up and says, enough, enough. And it's 2 years on, by the way. I mean, this is the kind of ruling really that should have been there 24 months ago. You can't do this. You can't do this to an entire nation. You can't shut down and destroy all these businesses. You can't enforce mask wearing or vaccine mandates? A little bit too little too late, I think. In any event, go back and look at that article. The cure is killing us. That's from June of 2020. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, just send us a note, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty. Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
On the Bible study segments this week, we've been talking about what the New Testament says, in particular the New Testament. We've certainly touched on some Old Testament verses too. But what the New Testament says about the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. And yesterday with the program, we finished off making the point that following the death of the Apostle John in the 90s AD there, that first century, following that time period, Mr. Armstrong, remember, talked about in Mystery of the Ages and other publications, this dark cloud, quoting or paraphrasing from the historian Gibbon, the dark cloud that sort of hung over those early centuries of Christianity, and how that when this veil's lifted, what emerged was a church that wasn't keeping to the original teachings and beliefs at all. It was very different than the one in the first century. Those early centuries, there was, in some cases, a violent controversy over Passover and Easter. Which one is biblical? Which one are true Christians to observe? the Quarto Decimin controversy. That's what it's called. And so you have even in the first century, you had the Jews observing the Passover a day late, effectively, the 15th of the first month on the sacred calendar. And then a couple centuries in, with the help of the Roman Empire, you have so-called Christians observing Easter, having nothing to do with Passover. But then you have this small group, a little flock. Their history is discussed in Revelation 2 and Revelation 3. And they were faithfully observing the Passover as Jesus did the final night of his ministry, as the Apostle Paul did in Corinth and elsewhere. This is from the Encyclopedia Britannica. I gave you a quote from this yesterday, but it says, generally speaking, I also mentioned how that after the death of John, then the apostolic baton was handed over to Polycarp, sorry. So here's a quote from Encyclopedia Britannica. It says, generally speaking, the Western Church has kept Easter on the first day of the week, while the Eastern churches kept Passover on the 14th day. Polycarp, the disciple of St. John, the evangelist and bishop of Smyrna, visited Rome in 159 to confer with Anicetus, the bishop of that see or that area, on the subject. It says, and urged the tradition which he had received from the apostle. So this is in 159 AD. So we're now several decades beyond the apostle John. He dies in the 90s, and so 50, 60 years later, here comes Polycarp to Rome, arguing that we need to be observing Passover on the 14th day. It says here, Anicetus, however, declined to admit the Jewish custom. You know, he saw it as Jewish. A Jewish custom in the churches under his jurisdiction. It says, about 40 years later, 197, the question was discussed in a very different spirit between Victor, Bishop of Rome, and Polycrates, Metropolitan or Proconsular of Asia. Polycrates is the one who then received the baton of authority from Polycarp. It says, Victor demanded that all should adopt the usage prevailing at Rome. It says, the few who afterwards separated themselves from the unity of the church and continued to keep the 14th day were named Quarto Decimani, and the dispute itself is known as the Quarto Decimin controversy. Now, you can look into some of the history of Polycarp and Polycrates, and again, this crucial time period in the early church, God's church, is discussed in this wonderful book, a real eye-opener, the history, the true history of God's true church. Call our operators today and request your free copy, something like 200 and 250 pages. History that you don't generally get into. There's a few exceptions in secular history books. Our operators are standing by, 1-866-930-3024. It's a toll-free call in the United States if you live in the U.S. or Canada or the Caribbean. But you look at the history of Polycarp. He's arrested shortly after his confrontation with the great false church in Rome, and then later burned alive for failing to bow down before Caesar. So after Polycarp's death, as I say, the baton is passed to Polycrates, and you read about some of the, again, the battles that he had with Rome to keep the truth alive, to fight for the Passover. His confrontations with Victor, the one mentioned in that quote that I just read to you, Victor wanted to enforce Easter worship, and Polycrates refused to give in, and he held firm to the Passover observance. And then Polycrates wrote this. It says, we, for our part, keep the day, Passover, scrupulously, without addition or subtraction. For in Asia, great luminaries sleep, who shall rise again on the day of the Eternal's advent, it says, when he is coming with glory from heaven and shall search out all of his saints. So he listed several of God's people who had already died fighting for the truth, including Philip, the Apostle John, Polycarp, And then he writes this, Polycrates does, all of these kept the 14th day of the month in accordance with the gospel, not deviating in the least, but following the rule of the faith. He says, look, we're just following in the example of the original apostles. We're following in the steps of Jesus Christ. We're not upholding man-made traditions. So the fight raged on for centuries. It was 325 A.D. when the Church of Rome held the Council of Nicaea. Here again, some of this history. I know I'm flying through a lot of it, but this is discussed in this wonderful book, The True History of God's True Church. But the leaders at Rome, the leaders in the Great False Church, they wanted Easter to be enforced. That was to be observed. Passover was labeled as a Jewish observance, not Christian. And so you have, as I say, this history of God's true church fighting for the truth, fighting to keep the truth alive during these critical centuries when Satan was hard at work trying to blot out true religion, trying to blot out God's people, chasing after, persecuting the saints of God. We see so much of his influence today, with respect to our nations. Think about what he was doing, what was most important to him back in the early centuries of God's church. You can see this too. I mean, just leaving aside Passover or what the Bible instruction is for us regarding those festivals of God. But then just look at the general history there in the book of Acts, for example, and how that God's people were just constantly persecuted and chased after. And Paul writing in his epistles, or John, to look at the epistle of 2 John, and just the resistance. Read 2 Corinthians 11 sometime. All of the false apostles, all of the false gospels that were making their way, even in the first century. I mean, you would think at that time, if everyone would have been in, I mean, if you're talking about the Christian movement, you would think, I mean, you're just a few years removed from Jesus himself. And yet, look at how quickly false doctrine can take root. Look at how quickly Satan the devil can produce a counterfeit based on lies. Oh, taking the name of Christ, taking the name Christian, but then having all of these doctrines that are steeped in ancient Babylon. Read the book of Jude. Read that short epistle. Read Jude 3 and Jude 4 and see how that they turn the grace of God into a license or an excuse to disobey God's commandments. I mean, the first century apostles, they encountered quite a lot of resistance in every area, in every respect, including with respect to the Passover. Let's just look at 2 Timothy chapter 3, just to put a concluding point on what we've discussed this week. This is Paul writing about the New Testament, writing about the entirety of the Bible. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 16. Always, 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 we've got to come back to what the Bible says we ought to do and observe and obey, because this is God's truth. This is God's word. Verse 16, it says, all scripture, this is 2 Timothy 3, all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness. And then you can follow on from this right into chapter 4 and see how that people will turn away their ears from the truth. That's verse 4 of chapter 4. They'll just turn away from the truth. They don't want the truth. They don't want to obey God. They don't want to observe God's festivals. They want to observe their own traditions, the traditions of men. Jesus encountered people like that in the first century. But here we are today, 2,000 years on, and look at how much, as I said on Monday's show, look at how much division there is in the world of Christianity. Look at how split up and divided they all are. But you look to God's people, you look at God's people, you look at God's church, and you see unity. You see the Word of God. You see the instructions coming from the Bible every year at Passover, at the Passover service. That's something that I'll emphasize over and again, just how closely we follow all of the instructions that Jesus left for us, that the Apostle Paul wrote about when it comes to that Passover observance. It has to come out from the Bible. The Bible is God's inspired word. The Bible is Jesus Christ in print. A couple of emails here before we conclude. We've got some time. This is from the Trinidad brethren. It says here, just a little note to thank you for the great work you and your father are doing in bringing the truth to the world. I always read with such alacrity the articles that you both write, The Trumpet and in the online briefings, information and knowledge that is hard to come by. I love the way the Bible is used to explain the politics of America and world affairs. No other international magazines have been able to do this with such great analysis and insight. That from Trinidad. Another one here says, thank you for relentlessly exposing the phony president and his utter inability to rule even himself. Keep up the incessant truth proclaiming. My prayers continue for you all. This one here says, good to hear your voice. You are missed when you are gone. Nice of you to say that. There's a couple of nice ones here for Sam and Brent also, who subbed in last week. Hopefully I can get down to those. But it says, what a world we live in today. Almost daily, random shootings and murder, young people trying to figure out what sex they are. Then we have people starving because of COVID isolation. Putin now says we may have unpredictable consequences for helping Ukraine. Spiritual wickedness in high places for sure. Thanks for the Trumpet Daily. Another one here says, thank you, your father and the entire flock, for the unselfish giving that you give day in and day out. I've been following the PCG for 8 years now. I watch the Trumpet Daily nearly every day, and if I miss it, I catch up. I read the awesome literature you offer. Thanks so much. It says, I'm so grateful to have had my mind open to God the Father's truth. I've made a lot of changes in my life, but I beat myself up all the time because of the frustrating feeling that the changes I've made are not enough. Well, I think to some degree we all kind of feel that way from time to time. So don't give up. Let God lead you to repentance, as it says in Romans 2 and verse 4. Go to God for strength to make these changes that you're working to make permanent. This one here says to Brent Noctegal, he subbed in last Thursday, I believe. Hope this finds you well. Thank you for taking the Trumpet Daily on Passover evening. The situation in the U.S. and Israel are very similar. It shows how much Satan influences this world everywhere. Keep doing God's work. Another one here says, I wanted to say thank you to Sam Livingston for an excellent show on Friday. I'm a regular viewer of your show and would also like to extend my thanks to all the other hosts that fill in during Stephen Fleury's absence. And then another one here, surely from Sam's father. It says, honestly, I believe I could watch and listen to Sam Livingston all day long. What a privilege to see and hear him on the Trumpet Daily. That's actually not from his father, but it comes from one of our regular viewers. Then finally, thanks again for the TD crew for all the research and production of the programs, inspiring, informative, corrective too. As you get into the Bible study portion, please keep them coming. And I'll say to you, please keep the emails coming, even if we can't read them all the time. We love reading them ourselves. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.